We're here at Angel Fire, and we're at the Paranormal Symposium 2009, and I'm Jerry Pippin. And it's always good to have interesting people with us, and Chuck Wade is a guy that we met at, the first time I think I met you was at the Crash Retrieval Conference.
Easily could be, yes.
Yeah, and at the time you had some of the things you found at the St. Augustine wreckage, the UFO crash.
Yes, and I just happened to have a piece of paper with seven pieces on it right here.
And good, we'll take a picture of it. Tell our audience exactly what we're talking about here while you're looking for that.
Okay, in 2004, I attended the crash of the Aztec craft, and Mr. Art Campbell was one of the presenters, and he had on stage parts and pieces that he had retrieved from the crash, the UFO crash, up from the plains of St. Augustine. And as soon as he stepped off stage, I put out my hands, shook his hand. We became friends. Over time, we decided we'd have an archaeological dig at the UFO crash site on the plains of St. Augustine, also known as the Barney Barnett site. And we did go down there. And what is here on the table now are small pieces that I physically cut from the bigger pieces of foils from that craft.
There's so many things to talk about here, but first of all, you've actually finally gotten somebody interested in analyzing this stuff.
That is correct. I had the good fortune to be interviewed by Joshua P. Warren out of Asheville, North Carolina, in February this year, and I told him during our conversation that I would send him some parts and pieces, and I did, and he had them analyzed a little bit, and he got interested in it. And then he was at the International UFO Congress in March of this year, '09.
In Laughlin, right.
And I didn't know that he was going to mention the preliminary studies he had done on this foils, and he didn't know I was in the audience.
You were in the audience when it happened.
And, oh, my God, I got inundated with people that sponsoring laboratories. As we speak, there are parts and pieces of this craft in three continents and a number of laboratories. And each of these laboratories and their sponsors have said that they will put these results onto the new website that my wife and I are putting up. It's called ChuckWadeUFO.com.
ChuckWadeUFO.com. When will I be up?
I was expecting to be up the first of this month. And also our web designer, I thought, was going to be here at this conference.
But it'll be pretty soon.
But I would say by the end of the month for sure. And it's going to be really nice.
And we'll let everybody know when on our regular UFO Files news and sightings show when that's available. And you're going to have to keep us informed. You're going to put it right up on the website when you get the results back from these labs, right?
That is correct. We're already designing in places to put these lab results.
And do you have any idea of the preliminary results? What was that? What did that show? When you were setting the audience, what happened there?
We've had it preliminary tested back in 04.
Uh-huh.
But what it was, we had it analyzed in cross-section, which means that you're looking at the end of the piece of foil. And these foils are different thicknesses, all the way from 14 microns. The aluminum foil in your kitchen is usually around 20, 24 microns. So we have stuff from all the way from 14 to 30, 45, and 65 is is the thickest we've got on the foils. Then we have one piece that is 1/16th of an inch, and it's 1,500 microns. That's to give you how small this stuff is.
Now, how did you guys, was Art with you when you were out there digging around?
That is correct. He got permission from the homeowner and the landowner, and it's on private land, so we have to get their permission, and they absolutely do not want us to tell where it is.
But it's in St. Augustine someplace.
Yeah, it's on the plains of St. Augustine, uh-huh. And it's south of the VLA, the very large array that, if you saw the movie Contact, that's where Judy Foster is doing her work there with those great, huge telescopes.
Now, when we talk about this crash at St. Augustine, is this connected with Roswell?
In a sense.
Okay.
This happened on the night of 1st to 2nd of July 1947. Roswell happened specifically on July the 4th, 1947. But your audience may not know, there were four crashes. And the people that are researching this, they call them the Roswell incident, but they got them all mixed up. They say that the one there by Corona, and it left a lot of debris, so it must have been a big crash. But it also left the debris there, but also it went up just a short ways and crashed as a big hunk of junk, but it didn't have all its parts and pieces. Uh-huh. And that's known as the Deep Proctor site.
Right, right.
Well, whenever you have the debris and the Deep Proctor, let's call it the craft site, that doesn't leave anything to go anywhere. So the Jim Ragsdale site is 53 miles due west of Roswell, and Jim Ragsdale and his girlfriend were having a nice weekend up there. They physically saw a very major flash out to the north, and that's basically where the Foster Ranch is north.
Uh-huh.
So they saw this flash, and it was as bright as a welder's torch. And then they saw it coming in. They clipped the trees, went over and wedged between rocks. And later on, they went over there to the craft, and it was broken open, and Jim Ragsdale physically went inside of that craft. And this is all by affidavit. It isn't just by my
imagination. Right.
And he said there were four dead aliens in this craft. And they went back to the pickup, and in the morning early, they went back to the craft, and they were gathering up a couple gunny sacks full of parts and pieces, the foils and things. And then they heard this big roars of motors coming up that mountain. So they skedaddled out of there, and that would be the military come and get it. Radio audience, I would like to know, how did the military know to be up the side of that mountain that night and to pick up a whatever crashed?
Now, would that be July 3rd or July?
July 4th.
July 4th.
I'm reasonably sure it's July the 4th. Okay. But what happened is there were also two other craft crashed at the same time. And the Corona crash would be the same. Let's say the three UFOs going in formation. The first craft that was, and ladies and gentlemen, the United States military shot these crafts down. They didn't.
You're
this
convinced
fall.
Of them.
I am absolutely convinced of it, because it makes no sense. Well, they could not have found that craft on the side of that mountain, because it's heavily forested. My younger brother and I have been up to that site, and we were in the daytime with a map, and we had trouble finding it. How did the military know how to get up there? And let's go back to the plains of San Augustine. I've physically been there twice digging. Mm-hmm. And you cannot see a road from there. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And here came the military. And there was three different parties there at the plains of San Augustine that morning, because it landed at night. And the archaeologist on the east side of the place saw that big gleaning area over there to the west. Something had happened that night, because it wasn't there the day before. So they came across, and then Barney Barnett, who was a Soil Conservation Service guy, he was out there going from ranch to ranch, but he's using a back road, not the main road, because it's a long ways up. Well, not long ways, but
yeah, it would be an inconvenient.
Yeah, just take a shortcut from ranch to ranch.
You could just drive across the.
Yeah, it's a lot of land out there. Just drive over the old roads, and he saw it. So he was there, and he's a federal employee. And then also a family from Albuquerque, the Anderson family and others. I'm in email contact with Andy Anderson, and he's still alive. And to my knowledge and his knowledge, he's the only one that he knows is still alive for this. And I hope this doesn't give me any trouble. But he was there as a five-year-old kid. And in 1990, Andy made a tape with Stanton Friedman and others. And for 34 minutes on this tape, Andy tells about what he saw there. And people criticize, how could a five-year-old kid remember all that? Folks, from never five till the time these other folks died, they talked about it. They had some really insight. And there were three dead aliens on the outside and one live alien.
That's at St. Augustine?
Yeah, I misspoke. There's one dead alien outside, a live alien on the outside, and two dead aliens inside. So there's actually four aliens at that craft.
Okay, and at the Roswell crash, there were...
There could have been one at the Corona debris field because there were two live aliens out of this scenario. And we know for a fact that Jim Ragsdale, per affidavit, there's four dead ones. Basically, from the affidavit that Walter Haught wrote about 2002 to be opened or unsealed on his death in 2007, he said there was four aliens there. And I'm going to assume, I believe, that they were all dead, but I'm not sure. Oh, and we haven't spoken about the...
No, you still have another one.
Yeah, we've only talked about four so far. So let's go up to about 40 miles north of Roswell, and that's where the Walter Haught Colonel Corso site is. And the reason I say Colonel Corso, and Colonel Corso's book, The Day After Roswell, came out in June of 97 on the 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
He mentions the crash north of Roswell. And then whenever Walter Haught's affidavit came out, it was north of Roswell. So that makes five.
Okay, now so they all happened in a period July 2nd through July 4th?
That is correct.
How come it didn't happen all at the same time if they were flying in formation?
There was three of them that did happen at one time.
Okay.
But that one over on the plains of St. Augustine happened 2 days prior, so it wasn't in formation.
So perhaps these were looking for the other crash?
I predict not. I don't think that they look for anything. I've never heard of any of them ever coming back. Because these things may not be manned by an EBE with a conscience. We don't know. But there's a good chance
that
they were.
The reason I asked that, you know, our military, they go back for the dead.
Yeah, but that's our thinking. It may or may not be their thinking. I predict it isn't their thinking. At no time have I ever read that they came back for anybody. And I've read a lot.
What do you when we talk about it, there's not many people that know any more about the Roswell and associated crashes than you, by the way.
That's who?
Than you.
I think you're correct on that.
Yeah.
That is the crash part of it. The people that was involved afterwards, the cleanup and all that, that is not my forte at all. I want to know how they crashed, why they crashed.
And you say they crashed because they were all shot down?
Yes, sir.
And, you know, we had this story floating around for a while. This guy from Texas said that he was in a fighter plane that chased him.
I understand that perfectly. And I, with all due respect, I think that that is wrong.
Yeah.
If it was one crash, that would work fine. There were three crashes, and
So how did we shoot them down, you figure?
We shot them down using high-powered radar. And why I can say that is whenever Los Alamos was put together in the early 1940s, the U.S. government and Atomic Energy Commission put in three high-powered radars to guard the skies over Los Alamos.
So they knew that the high-power radar would, affect terrestrial aircraft?
Well, I'm sure that, I don't know if they could do that, but they gave it a shot and it worked.
Okay.
It worked because it was designed to fry the electronics on any plane, and they would crash.
So this would probably be in conjunction with Aztec, too.
Yes, that happened in March 1948, the year after this one, and I feel confident they shot that one down, too, because that thing was so big, somebody gave the order to shoot it down because it wasn't very long at all that the military showed up. And it was also on radar prior. And whenever you go to that crash site there north of Aztec, there's a plaque saying that this craft was on radar. So they knew it was on radar. So just turn up the heat and shoot her down. Use these small ones to triangulate it. And here they come. So whenever the military showed up for a, I'm going to put in quotes, a plane crash, they would have showed up with an ambulance and stretcher. They did not do that. Whenever they showed up, they were armed and ready to take control. And that's exactly what happened on the plains of San Augustine. Whenever Andy Anderson says that the military showed up, and the military came in with a military vehicle, obviously, but they didn't. They were MPs with loaded guns, and they were belligerent, and they herded these people back out to the main road, and they weren't nice at all. I mean, they told them they'd shoot them and all kinds of stuff. But then whenever these folks got out to the main road, what did they see out there? They didn't see ambulances. They saw a flatbed truck, a crane, tanker trucks. There's two airplanes. Andy calls it an invasion force. How did the military know to have an invasion force out on the plains of San Augustine, 1947, when there's nothing out there? And they certainly wouldn't be expecting a plane crash.
We could talk for hours about Roswell.
I got
because, you. We're doing a documentary on Roswell revelations for television, okay. And we'll be back in touch with you about that.
Okay.
But I want to talk about it. You're interested in another subject here, too, that you talked about here at the conference.
My real passion is alternative energy. I've studied alternative.
I mean, you were pretty passionate about Roswell here in St. Augustine.
But I want to know how a UFO flies.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been hoodwinked for all these many years because a UFO does not have a motor in it. It don't have nothing. It don't have fuel tanks. It don't have motors. It don't have nothing. But they fly tremendously good. How? That's what I want to know. And I think that the foils that we have are part of it. We found foils, and I physically have foils from the plains of San Augustine. Jim Ragsdale and his girlfriend picked up a couple of gunny sacks of foil. There at Corona, there's truckloads of foil. And then in Walter Hott's affidavit on the craft north of Roswell, it had foil. That four crashes, four foils, there had to be a major reason for that foil to be there.
Here, right.
And I think that the foils will become the propulsion system of the craft. And why I can say that is I've also been studying a method of taking one part of electricity and turning it into 18 parts of heat.
Say that again.
You take one part of electricity and turn it into 18 parts of heat. Then you can take that heat, turn that into steam to run a turbine, to run a generator, to make electricity. Use one part of that electricity back there to run your infrared light bulb, and you've got a self-powering generator station. Here's the drawing, and that's all it takes. I have shown people that, with this thing on a napkin. And we can solve our energy problem anytime we want to, folks, by just going to this.
Do you think you're the only one who figured this out?
Oh, no, I didn't figure it out. Dr. Tom Bearden figured it out, and about 3 or 4 years ago, Dr. Tom Bearden and his friend Kenneth Moore, they put the provisional patent application on this process onto the Internet and gave it to the world because both of them just didn't have time to do all this. So I took that patent application and took quite some time, and my wife and I came up with this drawing here. It's only 11 by 17 page, and we drew it out and all. And then
is this a drawing on a website too?
It will be.
Okay.
It will be.
Okay.
And then I sent this to Dr. Bearden and had him check it over. So this isn't just a wild guess. This is an approved from Dr. Tom Bearden.
Now where's Dr. Bearden?
He's in Huntsville, Alabama.
Okay.
Wonderful, smart man. And I'm going to, whenever you look in the physics books about in 1983, you'll find a physics method called negative resonant absorption of the medium, which means basically nothing and it's backwards and it's wrong. The whole premise is this is wrong, because in the premise of this physics books is it says a little nano-sized particle becomes larger in diameter, and this excess energy comes into that particle through the excess diameter. That's absolutely false. What that little nano-sized particle starts vibrating, and what it does, it goes into the Heaviside energy flow component, which we are forbidden to use. the Heaviside.
Now who for? How come we're forbidden? Who did that?
Because
did the U.S. government?
No, it's the guy that started Chevron, J.P. Morgan.
Okay.
J.P. Morgan. Your audience may not know, but J.P. Morgan was very instrumental on getting the formulas that are used in electrical engineering made, and that was in 1892. They came up with, back about 30 years prior to that, say around 1860 or 70, a Mr. Maxwell, Charles Maxwell, came up with the Maxwell's equations. And this is 20 equations and 20 unknowns, and there wasn't six people in the world could solve them. It's extremely difficult. Also, in 1892, Morgan had these Maxwell's equations brought down to two equations and two unknowns, solvable. And then what he did, he took, and the left-hand side we'll call two equations, and that's fuel. Then on the right side is energy. So he's transferring fuel to energy, but then he made the absolute brilliant thing to screw everybody's sense. He made them equal. You have to put in so much fuel to put out so much energy. That is absolutely not necessary, because I've got information and know-how. We can make energy with no fuel and put out energy. And one of these is called a motionless electromagnetic generator. Dr. Tom Bearden and his crew got a patent on it March the 26th, 2002. The patent number is 6362718. And that little machine there, about the size of a bread box, can put out 10,000 watts of electricity. And if they've got working models of it, it's not on the market because they cannot control the quantity of energy that comes out of MEG. And the deal is with MEG is there is no incoming fuel as we know it, and there are no moving parts. How is that for something that will be well worth having?
So where are we going with this? How are we going to do something with this?
Well, MEG, the motionless electromagnetic generator, is hung up in the United Nations. Dr. Bearden signed, or their people, signed an agreement with a company that got money from the United Nations, a sizable amount of money, funded to put MEG in pre-production engineering, because it really, really needs it. And that was 2 years ago. They got funded. In 2 years, they've not released one penny of money. So they've done absolutely nothing in 2 years. And whether they'll ever replace it's hung up.
The conventional petroleum industry's probably got a hold of
it. Oh, yeah, big time. And
how are we going to get this unfrozen? How are we going to get this going? I guess by talking about it.
I appreciate, Mr. Pippin. I really, really appreciate talking, because we, the people of the world, need to have this.
Now, where can they find more about this? You have this website coming up.
Look at Dr. Tom Bearden's website, and I'll spell it because I can't pronounce it. It's CHENIERE.org, Chenier. And the reason the name of that is that Dr. Bearden and his group had to move to France, and it was close to the Chenier Lake, in order to get an international patent that you spoke of. They would not give him a patent through the United States Patent Office, but he got it through the international, and that was a fluke almost. So
so there is, at least the patent does exist, and so something may come of it.
Oh, I hope so.
And we've heard that the possibility that France may be a leader in this, maybe this is a reason.
It could be.
Yeah.
And also, while we're talking, I'd like to introduce you to GEET, G-E-E-T. GEET, the Global Environmental Energy Technology. I was at a conference in Albuquerque.
Yes, sir, to say, I think I met that fellow one time when he's having his first one. He's in Albuquerque.
That is correct.
Uh-huh.
And we'll have our Extraordinary Technology conference.
Don't you have another one coming up soon?
No, it'll be next year.
Next year, okay.
But it'll also be in Albuquerque, and then we don't know. Mm-hmm. But this GEET, and like I've mentioned to start with, I've studied alternative energy for many years. This GEET is absolutely the most fantastic thing I've ever heard of, nor seen, or even could imagine.
And what does it do?
It turns almost any fluid into a plasma that goes right into an engine for combustion. And that combustion, it has basically no CO2. It has lots and lots of energy. It actually increases the oxygen content. And it's fantastic, and it's working.
So, in other words, when we talk about these alternative energies, you're saying they've been here for a while.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Since Nikola Tesla said in the 1800s he could build energy without fuel. That's what we're doing now. With the motionless electromagnetic uses the energy from the vacuum. This adapted NREM uses energy from the vacuum. That's what these UFOs use, is energy from the vacuum, because they have to have energy. And the energy of the vacuum is the energy between you and I and you and your audience and the end of the universe is the vacuum. It's not pressure. It's space. And that space is chalked full of energy. Here's where we got screwed. Back in 1892, they put in the electrical engineering. The vacuum is inert, which means there is nothing there.
Yeah.
That is an absolute lie. And you electrical engineers out there need to get off your can, go over to the physics department. They say there's energy in the vacuum. Why in the world our universities can't get together and say the vacuum is alive, well, energized? And electrical engineering folks are going to ruin us if they don't get off of the Maxwell's equations that are equal. If they just take that unequal part out of Maxwell's equation, we can solve our energy problem any day we want, because we can make electrical energy without fuel.
Chuck Wade, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
And thanks for the revelations.
Thank you.
About Roswell and also about energy.
Well, GEET is the way to go, and I encourage you to look at my website, chuckwadeufo.com. It'll be up and running, and we're going to have all kinds of revolutionary energy things. There's stuff out there that's unreal, but
we'll,
it is.
We'll be back in touch.
Thank you, Jerry.
Always good to see you.
And I appreciate
it. I'm Jerry Pippin, and we're here at Angel Fire. Jane Swartley is our web producer, and Roberta Scott is our on-location producer. I'm Jerry Pippin. Thanks for listening, everyone. Cheers.